Okay, everyone, episode one of Trader's Edge podcast is going live right now. And who better to have as our first guest than none other than the co-founder of Predicting Alpha, the man himself, Jordan Rong. Jordan, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here, man. Thanks for having me out today.
Really happy to have you here. Jordan, we're going to get into the weeds on everything. I'm going to grill you a bit here, too.
Amazing.
But, man, you've had quite the trading journey.
Indeed. It's been some big swings.
Yeah. Highs and lows.
Absolutely.
Hopefully more highs than lows. We'll get into that, though.
Yeah.
So, look, before we get started, you know, a lot of people that are going to see this podcast are familiar with your face. You know, you're on the page a lot, a little more now that you're a little less camera shy. Mm-hmm. But before we get into the trading, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, right? Like, you know, where are you from? What do you do?
Yeah, so, you know, just like you, I'm from Toronto, Canada. And, you know, I'm basically a full-time trader. I manage friends and family money. We have a small fund. You know, almost we're approaching seven figures, and that's basically what I work on every day.
Man, that's so cool. So, how long have you been trading full time now?
I've been trading full time for about 3 years now.
Two and a half years. And how old? You're like 25?
20. Oh, actually, in about 2 weeks I'll be turning 25.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big milestone.
You're
big,
basically 30.
I know, right? Yeah, big milestone for sure.
Nice. So, what did you do before trading?
So I started trading pretty early on. I started trading, you know, right in high school. My dad always had like BNN playing, so I was always like, I wonder if I can make money here. So that's when I originally started trading. But it was really investing.
Mm-hmm.
But before
like
I got
Warren Buffett,
like Warren Buffett style, you know. Buy good companies at good prices. But before I actually got into like trading full time, I was an electrician. So right out of high school, I went to George Brown College, and I became an apprentice for 3 years.
3 years?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. What happened there? Did you finish your apprenticeship?
I didn't. No. So I actually about two years in or 3 years in, I decided, you know what, I blew up my hand. I had a big accident. Got 12 stitches. I was undoing a big light bulb, an industrial light bulb, so a 347. It cracked. The wire hit my hand, and my finger was just basically hanging on.
No way.
Yeah. So I said to myself, you know what? If this is already happening, only a few years in, you know, I probably don't want to do this for the rest of my life.
Wow. Were you trading at the same time?
I was, but I wasn't doing good. I was actually selling covered calls.
Selling covered calls?
Yeah, it's a popular strategy amongst retail.
Okay. So what you said that, you know, the first introduction to really finance in general and markets was your dad having BNN playing it all the time.
Yeah.
But what would you say was like the moment where you said, okay, this is something I really want to look into? What was it that really triggered that for you?
Probably seeing everyone else making like millions of dollars. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think when you first get into trading, you see it, you probably get into it through social media, or, you know, even when you're watching BNN, like these are big dogs. Like, and I always wondered, like, I want to be like these guys too, you know, making millions of dollars a year.
Yeah, no, I think we all have that, right? You know, it's one of the things that I think everyone gets into trading for.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, it's a big motivator, right?
Yeah.
You see the success, right? And you know, it's from your laptop, right? This is something that realistically people always feel like this is attainable.
Mm-hmm.
It is achievable, right? So where'd you go from there? So you started off with Warren Buffett value investing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously we all know where you end up now to some mm-hmm. degree. So tell us about how you got from Warren Buffett to building models, coding, doing all this work. Mm-hmm.
So right after like this Warren Buffett approach, I kind of, you know, got into something called the CAN-SLIM idea. So this is a simple approach that basically combines fundamentals and technicals. And it made a lot of sense to me. You know, you're buying companies that are continuing to go up and have good fundamentals. And actually, I think that was the earliest sign when I got introduced to like a data-driven approach, because even though I didn't realize it at the time, he would actually use historical numbers to prove, you know, why this system works.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, wow, you know, this guy can actually prove something. So I started looking into it and I started to try to implement that, you know, buying good companies that were breaking out to new highs, basically. And you know what? It could have worked, but for me, it was too slow moving.
Oh.
You know?
What do you mean by that?
So as a retail trader, at least when you're starting out, you only have access to 1x leverage, right?
Okay.
So you have a cash account.
Yes.
So if I have a, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 account, you know, and I'm using this strategy to make 20%, that's going to be $2,000 at the end of the year, you know, and on a day-to-day basis,
it's not life changing.
You know, I'm slaving away as an apprentice, electrical apprentice. You know what? And nothing bad against that. Like, I think it's a great career. You know, I learned a lot from my foreman, but it just wasn't something that I wanted. You know, and I was actually always into poker as well. And I kind of like, I was kind of getting introduced to the swings, you know, like having a $500 night, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, losing $1,000 in a night. Like I was starting getting introduced to that already.
Okay.
So seeing my stock go up, you know, $20 this week, it was like, ah, I don't want this.
Didn't do anything right? for you.
It didn't do anything. I wasn't excited about it. So I started, you know, to look into to more advanced techniques to get a little bit of leverage, option trading. I actually opened up a brokerage with Thinkorswim to get 3.5x leverage on my equities. I think back in the day, you know, we were allowed 3x leverage, but they cut that down now to 2x.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
People blowing up too much.
I guess, or I'm not too sure the reasons, but you know, things definitely changed.
Okay, so you're doing the canceling model.
Yeah.
You got a bit more leverage. You're trying to, you know, turn up the heat a little bit, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how old were you at this time?
I'm probably 19.
Right? Okay, so it was like 5 years ago.
Yeah,
almost six.
I'm 2 years into the trade. I'm 2 years into like the being like an apprentice, and I'm starting to get into like this.
Hmm.
You know, at this point I started like writing covered calls on. You know, when I found out about options, I started writing covered calls on my my equities mm-hmm. to get that extra income.
Okay, mm-hmm. And just to give everyone an idea, rough numbers.
Yeah.
How much were you making at this point in time?
For electrical?
No, through trading.
I was losing money.
Yeah.
I was losing money. Yeah. I mean, there was a slippery slope I went to about I went through a year after that,
mm-hmm.
where I started losing a lot of money, but at this point, you know, I was buying stocks, and the market was going up, and I was selling covered calls against it, so I definitely wasn't in bad shape.
Mm-hmm. You have your swings like you were talking about.
Yeah, you had my swings. I mean, there was, you know, there was like the start to my downfall was when I started to actually get serious into technical analysis. And I remember like I bought this one stock, MPC. So Marathon Petroleum Company.
Mm-hmm.
And like the company like got cut in half. And I like lost quite a bit of money there.
It sucks.
Yeah.
You know, I think every good trader has those stories though.
Yeah, right? Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd say every trader has those stories.
I think so. Yeah. I mean,
it's a part of the game.
Yeah. It makes you like, I think at that point, you know, it's, you think to yourself, okay, do I make this now? Do I actually start to, you know, really, you know, think about this and try to build a business off it? Or do I give up? You know, mm-hmm. I think like losing a lot of money is like your pivot point.
So, okay. Let's skip forward maybe a year here to where you started to get more into technicals.
Yeah.
What was it that made you make that switch and go, okay, let's go heavy here?
I saw it. Like, I really saw it, man. It was like the feeling you get when you first realize, like, oh my God, I'm seeing this pattern everywhere. It's like euphoric.
Euphoric.
Euphoric. It's such an adrenaline rush because all of a sudden you're thinking, wow, I can turn this into money. Right? Imagine like, you know, you see something and you know that when you see it, it equals money. And then all of a sudden you start seeing it everywhere.
I'd lose my shit.
Yeah, and that's what it felt like when you first realized, like, wow, I can see patterns here. It was quite an amazing experience. And I think at that point I was like, okay, I need to actually take trading very seriously and forget about becoming an electrician. Pattern recognition is actually built into, you know, who we are as a human.
What it means to be human.
Well, yeah, what it means to be human. I mean, like, I read this article by David Aronson, who's pretty respected who's pretty well respected in the game, and he was saying how, you know, back in the day, humans needed to see patterns in like the grass, for example, to know when a predator is, you know, when it's a predator versus just the wind.
Yeah, you got to know if it's a tiger or, you know, a 10-kilometer-an-hour breeze.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, we're like, humans see patterns in the clouds. We see them in hardwood floor. We see it in our food. We see it in the markets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is though, we can actually place bets on the markets. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, I'm almost certain that if people could place bets on the patterns they see in the clouds, they would do it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying. And that's why, like, even if you go to, like, a casino,
yeah,
and you know they have the, you know, if you look at the roulette table, they have the chart with what the last 10, mm-hmm. 10 spins were.
Yeah.
And if you look at it and it's all red, you're like, oh, it's got to be a black next time.
Exactly. But each
How spin, could it not?
That is actually such a very good point. Like, each spin is independent.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what the next, what the previous spin was.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, you know, I remember I used to go way back in the day when I was maybe 18 with my buddy to the casinos. And he used to think he was God at the roulette table.
At the roulette table. Yeah. Oh, no.
He thought he solved it. You know, if it was red, black, red, you know, maybe it was gonna be like a double black after or something. I can't remember the exact patterns there, but he saw them, you know, and you can place bets on them. And that's why people come to the casino,
mm-hmm.
right? They can place bets on their ideas.
So, you know, I agree with you, and, you know, it makes logical sense, the human pattern recognition phenomena. Yeah. But, you know, you brought this up. Why is that something that's so important to really grasp? Why does it matter?
Yeah, because you really need to understand, like, this is something built into me, and that it's obviously going to be in the forefront. It's something that I'm going to be seeing. I'm going to actually be, you know, it's going to be a big part of my decision making. So mm-hmm. I have to be aware of that.
Okay.
Right? And I can't let this take over my to be able to make good decisions.
So do you think that it's, you know, because a lot of people would say something along the lines of, like, follow your intuition,
mm-hmm.
right? In a lot of areas of life, you know, your gut feeling is usually right. You know, Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book called Blink,
mm-hmm.
and it was about, you know, the split second decision making of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought there was actually a lot of good points in there. So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, humans are very emotional as well. Mm-hmm. And when you go into trading, you can't be bringing those emotions in there, right? So we see patterns everywhere. I can't be bringing that to the trading world.
Why not?
Because it's very subjective,
right? It's subjective.
It's very subjective. It's not something I can prove. You know, it's not something that's evidence-based. It's basically what I see,
mm-hmm.
right? And someone else might come and look at the same chart and see something totally different.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy, right? Like, you know, I remember something we did with Predicting Alpha was we took our model and we generated a random chart, a random stock chart.
Yep.
It had no relationship to anything. There was no significance to it. It was random data plotted on a chart. And when we shared it, we asked people to do their analysis on it. And we got probably 10 different analysis on this one chart with no significance. It wasn't a real stock. People would guess at what it was. Some people thought it was the VIX. Some people thought it was other things.
Yeah.
You know, some people would be to say a breakout. There was a lot of analysis done on this. And it was completely random.
Yeah, I think that's a great example.
Mm-hmm. So at this point in time, you're knee deep in the technical game.
Yeah.
Like, when we say knee deep, like, I think it's important for people to know, and I'm interested too, how deep are we talking?
Yeah, so we're really deep. Like, so what I did was, so I used to actually go to chapters, like, every single day. Those are chapters right across my house. And I used to sit there for, you know, hours and hours and hours reading all the books because they were too expensive. Like, the people who actually, you know, go out and purchase these books will know of that. You know, a technical book costs you $50.
Mm-hmm.
It's not cheap. And when you're not making an insane amount of money, you can't be spending, you know, I was trying to absorb all this information. You know, I think when I really started taking it seriously, I probably read 100 books. 100 technical books, plus like a whole bunch of forum posts.
Wow.
And actually, I got so involved in it that I had this like crazy idea. You know, now that I look back on it, so it was ridiculous, but I was like, I'm going to go somewhere. Like, I'm too distracted in Toronto. I'm going to go somewhere where there's going to be no distractions, and all I do every single day is look at the markets and read books. And then when I come back, and let's say 3 months, I'm going to be a profitable trader.
Wow.
So that's exactly what I did. I packed my bags, went to Portugal for 3 months. Well, two and a half months to read and study technicals.
No way.
Way. I had like...
You literally moved out of the country to isolate yourself.
To isolate myself.
To study technicals.
Exactly. Because I was getting way too much...
Study anything.
You know, that's
crazy.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, I was always going out on the weekends. And, you know, every weekend, someone's calling up my phone. I had a girlfriend at the time. So I said, you know what?
You're like, baby, I'm sorry, but the money comes first. And you packed a bag and left.
Yeah. I mean, like, it felt so real too, you know? It felt like I was saying, you know, once you see these patterns, it feels like, okay, it's literally only a couple months away. Mm-hmm. So I packed it all up.
Wow.
And headed right out to Portugal for 3 months studying nonstop. Like, it was insane. And every time someone says, like, oh, you've been to Portugal? I say yes, but, like, at the same time, my life was, like, I was in a really nice condo. In a condo right by the beach. And then it'd be, like, wake up, see what the markets are doing. And there was a six-hour difference, too, right? Or five-hour difference. So it was a good time. But, like, study the markets and then head down to the beach with like, my technical analyst book. Like, read there, go for a swim, read some more, come back, do some studying, do some trading. Like, doing that every single day for almost 3 months.
And that's, like, dedication.
It was serious dedication. Like, I didn't go that whole period. I didn't have one beer. I didn't drink once. I didn't go out to any clubs.
And no way.
Yeah. And it was right on, like, the strip of, like, where the all the clubs were and stuff.
So you were serious.
I was super serious about it.
Yeah. I don't, like, think I've heard anyone take it more serious yeah. than that.
And, you know, it's so funny because, like, every time, like, I told, like, everyone I'm going out to study. When I'm going to Portugal on the beach to study, you know, and people are laughing, like, you're nuts. Like, this is not really going to happen. But I actually did that. You know, I actually, like did a whole 180.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I got to say, I commend you for actually sticking to that plan. I don't know if I'd have the discipline to do that.
I wanted it, man. I really wanted it, you know?
Fucking crazy. So let me ask you this. What misconceptions did you have when you first got into trading? Or maybe not misconceptions, but, like, challenges or realizations that you came to later on, you know, that you didn't have, like, before you really took trading seriously and you know, made some changes.
Yeah. So probably my main thing, actually, I was just looking at my old journal today, is that I can make, you know, a consistent money every single day. So, like, for example, I can make 1.5% no problem every single day.
That was the misconception.
That was a huge misconception.
That you could make 1.5% every single day consistently.
Exactly. Right, that was a huge misconception I had, but, like, it seems so easy, you know, like, it's just a few ticks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not like something.
It's a point here and there.
Dude, 1.5% today, like, that's nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, and over time it makes a lot of money. But I realized that being that consistent is impossible.
Impossible.
Impossible, especially as a human.
Okay, what do you mean, why as a human?
Because, first off, you're trading too slow, so you're gonna have periods of drawdowns, right? It's like if a casino only had one table, and they were playing a blackjack, mm-hmm. it's possible that after one day, that one table lost money.
Yeah,
but if that casino has 20 tables open, it's unlikely. It's super unlikely that after one day of playing blackjack, the casino is gonna come out not profitable. Mm-hmm. You know, so as a trader, if I'm only trading one name or two names, it's impossible for me to be making money every single day. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to have periods of drawdowns, you know, of losing money. So that was one big misconception that I had as a trader, that I was going to be so good one day, it was just going to, you know, make all my money.
So I'm going to ask you a little bit more of a personal question now. How much money did you actually put into your trading account when you were starting off?
Yeah, so I was working, right? I was working at Baton Rouge, and I was an electrician. So I was, like, working nonstop. I was making decent money, maybe $5,000, $4,000 a month, mm-hmm. as a, you know, 18, 19-year-old. So I was doing okay, and I saved up quite a bit of money. So I had about, I want to say $15,000, $20,000 of my own money.
Wow.
That's,
you know. Not bad for 18.
Not bad. Yeah, 18, 19, not bad.
So you started with 15 to 20.
Yeah.
And where'd it go? What happened?
So I made a really bad trade. I made two really bad trades, actually. I bought Beltrex and Badger Daylighting. And they got hammered. There was a big oil got smashed, and they were really tied to oil. Mm-hmm. So I lost a little bit of money there. But this is, like, when I was doing fundamental stuff, you know, didn't get into the technicals yet.
Okay.
So, you know, once I really started to, you know, think I could make it, I asked my parents to borrow a couple $1,000, about 10 grand. And so, you know, now my account's around $25,000, let's say. And
used it to pay for a trip to Portugal, didn't you?
No, that was actually, it was actually super cheap. So Portugal, the reason why I actually went to Portugal was because it's crazy cheap.
Really?
So, yeah. So my rent expenses were only $500 a month. Yeah, it was crazy cheap. And the food, I was doing all the cooking in my house. Yeah. It was super cheap. I think like that whole trip cost me maybe $2,000.
For
almost 3 months. Yeah. It was like insanely cheap. Like you can go to a local place there, get like a massive meal. So I'd probably only eat twice a day down there. You get a massive meal for $10.
Oh man.
Yeah. And like other than that, I would go to the supermarket just down the street. Super like dirt cheap, man. Portugal is probably one of the cheapest places in Europe. Get all my food. I was eating, they have great, and they have amazing watermelons down there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So was, my diet was like watermelon, pasta, and yogurt.
Okay, so that's how you did it.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was cheap, man.
Hey, actually, for a young guy from Toronto, that must have been the dream.
Yeah, it was. Honestly, it was. It was nice weather. Yeah, so I have, you know, $25,000 at this point, and I go to Portugal, I'm all in. I'm ready to make it big.
Mm-hmm. And so you had a couple bad trades, but yeah, you know, I'm sure you still had capital, or then you borrowed money.
Yeah, I still had capital though. It wasn't like I lost it all and then borrowed capital.
Yeah.
It was like, I still had some, you know, and I remember I was selling covered calls at the time too. So my returns weren't huge, right? Mm-hmm. When you sell a covered call, you cap your wins basically.
Yeah. Your swings weren't wild.
They weren't wild. No, no, no. Except for on Badger Daylighting. That was pretty wild.
Yeah. That still haunts you, eh?
Yeah. I think I actually own some of their shares still.
Oh yeah. You just couldn't get rid of that last little bit. You're like,
Yeah.
That's like ACB for me.
For
real,
eh?
I just have like, couple hundred shares just sitting there. Can't look at it.
Jeez.
So what happened after you borrowed the $10,000? You were back in the swing of things, you're back up to $25,000.
Yeah, I'm ready to take it on. Like I found Warrior Trading, so I thought they were pretty cool what they were doing. There's a couple other big names out there that I was like, wow, you know, these guys they're making a lot of sense here. Let's try to do it. So started trading every morning. Like it was a great routine. So every morning, let's get up, let's do this. Let's look for these exact trades. And I think at the time it was like high volume, like after earnings report day, for example.
Okay.
Like high volume stocks that were really volatile.
Okay.
And it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Was this like when you were like at your deepest point within the technical game?
Yeah, I'm pretty deep. I'm pretty... Maybe probably like over that next,
you're 100 bucks in, you're on borrowed money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't get much deeper, does it?
Yeah, no, dude, I'm like really taking it seriously at this point.
Mm-hmm. How old are you at this point?
Like, I basically quit my job.
Did you?
I quit my job, but maybe, and then I took off to Portugal to do this full time.
And that was, did you quit the apprenticeship at the same time? Or you must have quit that a little before.
No, no. So what happened was, I actually had to, so when you're doing an apprenticeship, you go to school.
Yeah.
So it was right after I finished the schooling period. So like in apprenticeship, it's like 10 months you're working, 2 months you go to school until you get, you know, until you become a certified electrician.
Okay.
So it was like right after that schooling period. And that's another thing too. I had like this period where I could study a little more about the trading. Right. I remember I was in George Brown, like looking up like Nike stocks,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, trying to trade Nike while I'm trying to do my course.
Okay. And if you don't mind me asking, how big was this drawdown?
Oh, it was like, after Portugal, I think over the next, so I was in Portugal 3 months, over the next 6 months, I basically lost like $15,000 to $20,000.
Of the 25?
Of the 25. Because it was so, like when you're trading really volatile stocks, you're getting huge swings. And I'd always get in at the wrong time. Like where I'd be going in, it would be going for me and then I'd be like, I'm out. Like I'd get greedy, you know. And then if it was going against me, I'd be like, "Ah, oh, it's gonna come back," okay. And it would just keep going down. Like it was, the emotions were really coming into play.
Yeah, you would sell early on the high side and sell too late on the low.
Exactly,
side.
Exactly. I think there was
let your losers run and cap your winners.
Exactly, doing like the total opposite of what you should be doing.
Why do you think that was?
Well, at the time. Like, I think I know why it is now, but maybe if I can go back and think about...
Yeah, think about how you thought then, and then share with us how you look at that same thing now.
Every, like, if I made $100, it'd be like, wow, like, this is great. Mm-hmm. You know, and then if I was losing money, I kind of like, I was in a place where I needed money, right? You know, I had living expenses, and the fear of like losing money was pretty bad. You know, so every time I would say that I was basically scared money.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So when I was making money, I'd cut them quick. I was like, oh yeah, $100, $200, perfect. You know, here's my like, well, in Portugal, here's a week of eating.
Yeah.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm getting better. I'm learning for a cheap cost. I used to tell myself. But you know, always like because when you're a retail trader or a discretionary trader, and you can only trade one or two names a day, you kind of get married to those names because you do a lot of research on them. Mm-hmm. And so I'd always say like, oh, it's going to come back. It's going to come back on the downside. And it never would. Or sometimes okay. It would. Right? But in the long run, I had no edge. Like, that was a big problem. I had no edge. My risk management wasn't fantastic. And I was scared.
Okay. And looking back now.
Yeah. So that was what I, at the time, probably why I didn't do it. But now when I look back at it, it's because I didn't really know what to expect.
Didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
You didn't know.
I didn't know. I put on a trade and I have a strategy. I have no clue what the expected value is.
Yeah.
Right?
Don't know what to expect for daily moves. You don't know what your drawdowns are.
Yeah. If I bring my, like what's the optimal like price target to get out at? What's like the optimal stop loss? I didn't know. So all of a sudden I'm in a trade, and then all of a sudden I see some candlestick that tells me it's a bearish signal. And now I'm like, ah, okay, I'm out.
Uh-oh.
Right? Uh-huh. So, yeah, just not knowing as a trader, you know, forecasting the future was...
Yeah, and I think something interesting you said just before we started up this podcast was that, you know, and then you... So when you see that bearish candle and you get out early, you're like, oh, I'm out. I'm taking the profits. I'm out. Mm-hmm. If it were to drop after that, you would go, see, I saw that. Yeah. I saw it. And then if it were to actually reverse and go back up, you'd be like, oh, I got out too early. So you were either right or there was something to learn.
Right. Exactly. It's like, oh, I was either right or I was greedy.
Yeah. Or you were undisciplined.
I was undisciplined. You know what I mean? And like, so you get into this like this rabbit wheel where you're never saying it's my strategy.
Oh.
You know what I mean? It's always, I was greedy or I was right.
Never the strategy.
It was never the strategy. It was never... Okay, is my strategy wrong here?
Wow. That's heavy.
Yeah.
So, was there ever a point in this crazy process for you where you thought of giving up?
Yeah, definitely, man. So many times, you know, so many times you just say to yourself, like, is this really worth it? Mm-hmm. You know, is it really worth, you know, making not even great money for... all this time you're spending in, all this isolation. Like at the end of the day, to be the best, to be a great trader, you have to spend a lot of time on this. Mm-hmm. Right? There's no ways around that. You know, people might say like, oh, I still want to be a trader and have a lifestyle. That's not how it works. You know, it's a very competitive game. And so you always doubt, like, I always said to myself, okay, I'm just gonna do something else. I'm just gonna go back to being an electrician. You know, and even now, like I remember, right, when I started learning about quantitative trading, I was like, ah, do I really want to learn this stuff? Like, I wasn't the best at math, and I had to actually learn this stuff. I didn't know how to code. And I was like, should I really learn this stuff? Is it really worth it?
Wow. Yeah, that's it. It's a long road.
It's a really long road. And I think, you know, people think that they can turn $1,000 into, you know, $500,000 in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. So we're gonna skip ahead here a little bit. So we've talked, like, I don't know. I hope the listeners can too, but I'm feeling that pain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've spoken to you before, so I know that's not where the pain ends.
Yeah.
So let's jump ahead a little bit, get to the juicy stuff here. When did things start to change?
Yeah, like when did I start to, I guess, try to put technicals aside?
Yeah. What happened? What was it just time? Like, what happened?
No. So I actually, you know, I did my Canadian Securities Institute, my CSC, my CPH, my technical analysis. I thought, like, okay, these guys are institutions. Like, if I learn from them, I'll be able to make it. But But you know, it was pretty much a scam, I think. But what happened was I actually bumped into your uncle. So I was still heavy in technical analysis, very heavy actually. And I bumped into your uncle. And for those of you that don't know, Sean's uncle is he does very well for himself. He's a fund manager, and you know, he's a big dog. And so I bumped into him in the Royal Fairmont.
Mm-hmm. Downtown Toronto.
Downtown Toronto. And I told him what I was like, I heard him talking big deals. I heard him talking big numbers with this guy. I texted you, and I was like, "Hey, is this your uncle?" And then you said, "Yeah, that's my uncle." I was like, "Oh my god!" So I went up to him and I was like, "Hey, you know, I don't know if you remember me, but I'm Sean's friend, and I'm trading. You know, this is how I'm trading. I just finished my technical analysis at the CSI, and he looked at me. He's like, "Dude, nobody does this."
Whoa.
And I was like, yeah, but what do you mean? Like, I'm looking at it right here, and the volume's right here, and like I can see the big guys coming in here, and there's a big breakout. And he like laughed at me.
He
laughed at me. He's like, this is 1% of the analysis. I remember that. I'll never forget that. This is 1% of the analysis, if that.
Really?
Yeah.
And I know how he talks. He was probably like really heated.
He was probably like, what the hell is this guy talking about? You know,
oh my
he's been
God.
In the business for so long, he probably doesn't come around it anymore, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, someone like you and me who are, you know, online, we see it all the time.
Yeah.
But a lot of these big dogs actually like don't even really know it exists. Like they don't even know like how big that community actually is in the retail mm-hmm. space.
Yeah, unless they were involved in it, why would they?
Right, right. So, you know, I remember I was just so pissed that day. I went home. I told my parents, I was like, I can't believe this guy told me this stuff. You know, like, I spent so long trying to do this, and I still see the patterns, even though he told me, dude, get away from this stuff. You know, he said, in fact, I remember him saying, like, he's seen so many people lose it all where he was working.
Really?
Yeah.
Where he was working.
But before.
Doing the technicals.
Before, when he was working at the big bank before.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And so, you know, it's, I think, you know, once I had that in the back, it was always in the back of my mind now. You know, he told me to look mm-hmm. at quantitative trading. I remember I actually emailed him. He never got back to me. He's like, I'll talk to you in like 3 months. I'm busy right now. I was like,
Like when we talked to him a couple months ago and he was like, that's that 1 hour I have for you. Now never message me about
exactly,
this again.
Exactly.
He's like, I'm busy. Don't ever talk to me again.
Yeah. So, you know, I
like, what a great uncle.
I know, honestly. Yeah. So I always had that in the back of my mind, like quantitative trading. So like every time I was like, you know, when you're going to buy a new car, you start seeing it everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's what started happening. Like I started going on a couple forums. And then I started seeing like, okay, this guy's talking about it. This guy's talking about it. Let me read a little more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I started to meet some really good, good traders.
Yeah. Some of the guys that supported you for a while.
Yeah. Supported me for a while. And, you know, had the patience to, I guess I was just so curious. I was so like, I'm so obsessed with trading, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if they wouldn't message me, if they wouldn't respond, I'd message them again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of drove some of them crazy, but we ended up building relationships on that.
Yeah.
And they guided me through, you know, how to become profitable. What they were doing at work, for example, for a big fund.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty game changing.
Yeah. Honestly, number one thing I would say that changes people is good mentorship.
Good mentorship. That's interesting when we're in a space so flooded with mentorship.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, if you need a really good mentor, that can actually help you flip the switch.
Flip the switch?
Yes, flip the switch. Because when you're trying to learn it all, it can become overwhelming. And you need someone that can, you know, tell you what to be reading mm-hmm. and answer your questions, right? Because the way you learn is from asking questions and having, you know, someone answer them mm-hmm. for you.
No, I hear you on that. That's really, wow. That's crazy, man. Yeah, and that's, you know, I think about my trading experience. I've been lucky enough to have you there.
Mm-hmm.
And without you there, I wouldn't know where to start.
Exactly. You know, and you always say, like, because something that we also talk about is that you don't need a mentor. to mm-hmm. be profitable, but you need a mentor to put you in the right direction, mm-hmm. right? Like you always talk about, how do you know where you're going?
Yeah.
Right. And once someone can say like at least dig enough, like a deep enough route for you that you can start following, and then you can pick up the shovel and start digging down that route as well.
Okay. Yeah. Right? That makes sense.
But when you're just like, there's no route, there's no rut, you're lost.
Yeah.
You know, so you really need that someone there to say, and someone good, a good mentor who's actually doing it in the real world.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, what in your opinion makes a good mentor?
Someone that has a lot of patience, and that when they talk to you, they give you things to research. Like I have this one mentor who, every time I talk to him, it's not like he answers my question and that's it. When he answers my question, it always leaves me with something else to research. So I'm always like moving. I'm never stop. I'm like, mm-hmm. if I talk to him, it's never going to be like, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, thanks for answering my question.
I'll look into this.
Yeah. It's to be like, this is amazing. Thanks. I'm going to look into this. Then I'll learn about it. And then I'll come back to him and be like, hey, I'm having a little tough time with this. Do you mind helping me? And he'll help me. But when he helps me, it like pushes me forward. You know, they're always like pushing you forward without giving you, you know, without blindly giving you the answer.
Wow. Yeah, that'd be pretty powerful to have in any aspect, right? A mentor you have for anything.
Yeah.
It'd be great to have someone like that.
I agree. I mean, like even, you know, and with the being online now, you can just go on something. So in the coding world, you can go on something like Stack Overflow, for example,
yeah.
and interact with these like serious programmers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but people don't want to take advantage of opportunities like that.
Why do you think that is?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. I'm not too sure. I think I'm actually not too sure.
It sounds like you have a lot of appreciation for your mentors,
though. Yeah, definitely. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, there are people that do go out and actually try to seek these mentors. Actually, you know what? Maybe the reason is because they ask silly questions. A lot of people might ask silly questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without putting the time into, you know, to read up on something, and the mentor might be like, I don't want to mentor this guy.
Yeah, maybe, you know, just to build on that, it's like, you know, just because I can speak to this because we've known each other for so long, it's like, in the questions you ask, it's evident how much work you've put in.
Mm-hmm.
Are you asking a surface level question? Are you asking something that I actually find intriguing? What are you asking me?
Exactly.
And depending on what you're asking me, you either pique my interest or you don't, as the person in the mentor's shoes.
Exactly. I think that's really well put. And something actually that one of my mentors told me is like, a lot of mathematicians go and teach because it solidifies knowledge in their head.
Yeah, right? That's, you know, if you're good at something, go teach it.
Yeah,
I mean, it'll like, really solidify it.
Yeah, I feel like I've learned a lot talking to you about, you know, and helping you become a trader as well.
Mm-hmm. And you actually have a couple other people you mentor in person as well, don't you?
Yeah, like and you know, Palumi, for example, one of my mentees, I would call him. He would always ask surface level questions, and I would never get back to him. I'd be like, this guy's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But the only reason why we've actually built a relationship is because he wouldn't stop messaging me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So
he knew that you were the quant.
Yeah, I would go to school at the terminal, and then I turned my head, and there he is popping out of the woodworks.
Oh, yeah?
You know? So it was like, you know, if you're not going to be, if you're not going to be dedicated to it, and like he was dedicated in the sense that he was always wanted to be there.
Yeah.
You know? But if you're not going to be dedicated to it, I think the person on the other end is not going to want to help.
They'll feel it.
They're going to feel it. Yeah, just like you said.
Wow. Holy crap, man. So, all right. You've told us a lot of drama, a lot of the bad, some of the good.
Yeah.
Right? But look, I think that's super important. Like, I think we're in a space right now where everybody sees the good, but nobody sees the pain. And when they do see the pain, it's not so much they don't see the I spent 5 years wasting my life to find out a better direction to head in. What they see as the pain is I had to get in the trenches and grind. It was 5 years of grind. I blew a couple accounts, but I knew I was in the right direction the entire... That's not always the case.
It's not the case.
Pain comes in many ways, you know, and you've really shown that in this conversation.
Yeah, I would even say that. That's why a lot of people get into trading, is because when they get into trading, if I'm watching someone on BNN, they've already made it. If I go on YouTube, they've already talking like they've made it. If I go, like I think we've talked about this a few times. 95% of traders lose money.
Yeah. Yet
when you talk to them, 95% of traders make money.
Yeah.
So you're getting into the space almost thinking, I'm going to make money, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to grind it out for a couple of years and boom, I'm in the game.
Like, even today on our live, we had an interesting comment from someone. We were talking about trading with someone and he had said, you know, I've been trading for 3 years and I'm profitable. And he was arguing with us about, you know, we were debating technicals versus fundamentals, et cetera. Yeah. And, one thing he said to us was that he'd been trading for 3 years and he was profitable overall. And as our conversation went on, what actually came out of the conversation was his first 2 years were really rough. This last year has been good for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a conversation we get a lot from people that sort of fits that narrative of grinding it out for a couple of years and then you make it.
Mm-hmm.
But, what I really didn't get a chance to ask, what I'd love to know is, has the last year been profitable or is he cumulatively profitable?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, especially in spaces where there's a lot of leverage, when you look at Forex and stuff, you'll run into a lot of traders who, you know, their current account is up, but they've blown 5 accounts.
Yeah.
And you're like, they're not lying to you when they say they're profitable. Because if you were to look at their brokerage statement,
mm-hmm.
they are profitable.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't tell you, or they're not thinking of it even in the sense of, what if I cumulatively looked at my returns?
Yeah.
Right?
I think we were talking about today, you know, like the definition of insanity is going into
doing the same thing different results.
Exactly. And that's where a lot of people get stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then once they make money on an account once, they think they solved the case. I was telling you about my friend the other day, right?
Yeah. With crude.
So it's tough. It's really it's a slippery slope. Trading is definitely a very slippery slope.
Yeah, I understand that. Back on track though. So how are things looking now? How's the last few years of trading been for you?
Yeah. So,
and what's changed? What's really changed? Because I have an idea of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, it's complicated shit.
Yeah, you know what? I wouldn't even say it's that complicated. Maybe like some of the pieces are complicated. And if you are, if you're new to trading or if you're just strictly on technical analysis, you'd be like, wow, this is complicated stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like there are some guys that I've talked with that are really doing complicated stuff.
Yeah.
And I look like, a little tadpole.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's really only complicated because maybe you're not in the industry.
Yes.
Right? The person in technical analysis is not really in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get in the industry, you know, it's like an engineer, right? When you're, everyone who's sitting down at an engineering desk is, they all know the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And to them, it's not complicated. It's just another day. But to onlookers, we're going to be like, wow, this is tough stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, it's interesting when I talk to like an engineer or something,
mm-hmm.
or when I talk to you even, we're discussing, you know, quantitative analysis, we're discussing trading, the markets, et cetera. You and I have a pretty good conversation, right? Me and the engineer have a pretty good conversation when we talk about, you know, structural engineering, anything of that mm-hmm. nature. Then you listen to an engineer talk to an engineer.
Exactly.
And you're like, what language are they speaking?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's literally like they're speaking Russian. I have no idea what they're saying. And it's like, whoa. But they're talking fluently to each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's another day for them. Nothing changed there.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a pretty good thing to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Is that once you start actually getting into it, things will start flowing a lot better. Like all the jargon will start making sense.
So last couple of years, you've been managing some money.
Yeah. So I started
managing. You can give ballpark numbers here and everything.
Yeah. So about,
how's it gone?
About $600,000 we're managing. And, you know, this started about 2 years ago. 2 years ago when I started getting into this. Because it took me about a year to learn how to build models, to do the math, to do the programming, to learn options properly. So it took me about a year. And then once I got that, it was time to jump in, right? And, you know, of course, right away, I wasn't profitable, I remember. But as I started to learn more and really was able to basically find a $5 bill for $3, you know, it's kind of easy to make money now.
Yeah.
Right? You're not, you're not guessing anymore. It's not subjective.
Mm-hmm. So that's cheap is cheap.
Cheap is cheap. And
expensive is expensive.
Exactly. And, you know, you try to build models to, you know, to be able to build something that's called stationary, you know, where it's something's expensive and it usually doesn't go higher than that. And then when something's cheap, it doesn't usually go lower than that.
Right?
If you look at a stock, for example, it just goes up and to the right.
Yeah.
So you can't really say, is this cheap or expensive?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you look at something like a price to earnings ratio, it'll usually stay in a band.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, okay, this is cheap, this is expensive. I'm not saying I trade price earnings, but, you know, it's a very simple form of quantitative trading.
So how did you do last year, if you don't mind me asking? Ballpark numbers?
Yeah, so last year we did about 90%.
90%?
90% last year.
Okay. And what would you have, like, one big trade?
Yeah, I was riding Tesla.
You're on those Tesla calls?
Yeah, I was on the Tesla calls.
Tesla to the moon. And then you hopped into SPCE after, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. No, I traded about $2 million worth of option premium.
Okay.
So, I was, you know at
how many trades is that?
It was about, I think, 1,500 trades.
Wow.
You know, or 2,000 trades altogether.
So you placed 2,000 trades and overall came out 90%
up. 90% up. So it wasn't like, you know, I got lucky here. It was, you know, dedicated work. It was calculated risk, calculated returns. A lot of grind and a lot of computers. You know, I think my biggest asset is probably coding.
You think so?
Knowing R and being able to pull data, manipulate data and be able to, you know, try to build expected returns and expected, at least try to model that.
Wow. So I guess you kind of gave it away a little bit a few seconds ago there, but what do you trade? What assets do you like to trade?
Yeah. And why? I trade options. Most of the time I'm trading options. I just love the complexity of it. You know, a lot of people don't understand that in an option, there's a lot of things going on, right? There's a lot of moving parts going on in an option and it gives you a lot of different ways to trade them, right? So for example, if you're buying an equity, it's either up or down, right? But now in an options market, for example, we can trade the term structure. We can basically isolate an event, right? If we want to just trade an earnings event, we can isolate that using maybe a calendar spread. You have access to things like convexity. So if you wanted to trade, you know, a risk premium, like a variance risk premium, you can do stuff like that. It's a very amazing market.
So, you know, that's cool and all. I don't mean to downplay it there. I had something on my mind here and I'm going to share it with you.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you and I are working on predicting alpha together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, a question that we get a lot is, why would you do this? You have something good going for you.
Yeah.
In the trading space. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing what you're doing with predicting alpha? And how do you view predicting alpha? Maybe throw that in there. Little shameless plug for our company.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great question that a lot of mentors get and a lot of you know, data providers get is, why would you do this? You know, why not use it for yourself to make money?
Yep.
And it's an interesting question because, you know, as a strategy gets more well known, it starts to deteriorate.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've seen so many of my friends lose a lot of money trading, especially in the Aurora cannabis sector. You can, the weed sector, you know, I'm sure you can relate to that.
Yeah, we'll save that for my podcast. We're not getting into that.
Yeah, right. and so, you know, there's a huge gap between the retail and the institutional trader. You know, and I was there where I was in the dark. I had nowhere to turn to. I was wasting my life trying to learn technical analysis. And I just don't want to see other people do that. You know, I want them to start getting into quantitative trading. Start, like, just as the mentors, you know, as my mentors have put me on the right path and didn't even charge a fee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did it for free out of the goodness of their heart and how they love talking about trading. And, you know, I think we have an opportunity to do this as well to a broad group of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're young enough where we can actually spend the time to bring up a group of people. And that's so important to me.
Yeah.
And I think we're doing a really good thing here. And also, actually, I'd actually want to... I know we're coming out with our little Predicting Alpha terminal. One of the biggest game changers for me was to have access to a Bloomberg terminal. To be able to see the data. you know, have it all at the at my fingertips.
Yeah. Right. Because yeah, that's really what it is, right? You know, the game starts with having access.
Exactly. The game starts with being able to have the access to the data. Yeah.
Can you even get into the arena to play?
Yeah. I mean, I always wondered, like, if there's technical analysis, why are guys spending $500,000 on data? I had, like, one of my portfolio manager friends said he spent $250,000 on data.
One person.
One portfolio manager, $250,000 on data. And it's like, well, hey, dude, just use a trend line. Why are you spending $250,000? Right? And then, you know, you need to really think about this. Why is this guy doing that?
Wow.
Right? Is it because maybe there's something there? And so when I started getting to the Bloomberg terminal and really visualizing this stuff and being able to see this stuff, I was like, wow.
You keep using the word visualize.
Yeah.
Why is that so important?
It's a great question. I think, you know, at least when you first start out, you can't really code. So, you know, like numbers really mean nothing to you.
So is visualizing being able to take numbers and just turn them into graphs? Like, yeah. Well, how would you describe visualizing?
Yeah, being able to visualize data, I think, is so important. You know, if you're just looking at a table, I think there was a silly saying that's like, trying to pull information from a table is like trying to pull sunlight out of a cucumber. You know, what? It's like it can't be done, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, that's totally wrong. But at the same time, it has a good point. Like looking at data by itself, raw data, it's tough to get any like information out of it. When you can look at it in like visually, all of a sudden, you know, things start looking a lot nicer. It's a lot more intuitive.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, little shameless plug here for us. How does the PA terminal work with you on this?
Yeah. So,
what's the whole point of that?
Yeah, yeah. So the, you know, because I find like visuals are so important. What we do is we take a whole bunch of raw data, do our transformations, and then graph it to you in a beautiful graph, right? So now you can visualize what this data is telling you, what you can extract the information quickly and efficiently.
And then what do you do with that?
You can make a trade. Remember, like a picture tells you 1,000 words,
mm-hmm.
You know? So you can see, for example, 1,000 lines of rows of data in a scatter plot very nicely.
Yeah.
If you were to look at that data in a column, it would look like nothing to you.
Exactly. Okay. Wow. Makes sense. That's amazing, Jordan. I'm going to ask you one more question here.
Yeah, let's do it.
If you had one piece of advice that you could give, I know, right? Cheesy question.
No, it's a great one. It's a great one.
You got it. I'm asking every single guest we have from here on out this question at the end. Any future people on our podcast that are listening right now, you can study for this one. You know this one's coming. One piece of advice for all the traders that make it this far into the podcast. Yeah. What would it be?
It would be stay educationally humble. Ask yourself why you're doing what you're doing. Plan out a goal for yourself, right? Where do you want to be in a few years? And start looking at people who have got to that goal. Start trying to find people who've actually done what you want to do. Reach out to them and understand that it's going to take a lot of work to get there. So be ready to put in the time.
All right, Jordan. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you, man. All right. So that's the end of our first episode of our podcast, Trader's Edge. I hope you guys liked that. I know it was a long one. You know, I thought it was important to really give Jordan the time to explain his story. You know, he is co-founder of my company after all. Can't really cut him short. So, you know, I had to let him run with it for a bit. But I really hope you liked it. You made it this far. I'd love some feedback. You know, make sure to follow the podcast. And, you know, we'll be talking soon. We expect to have a lot of really good guests on this show. We're going to be talking to people from all different backgrounds, people who have, you know, built phenomenal careers in the trading space, whether it's as a trader, as a mentor, as a researcher. There's so many different ways to make money within the financial markets, and, you know, we're going to explore all of it. So until next time, thanks for tuning in.